Okay, thank you, everyone. We will use the last sort of half an hour, 40 minutes, just to listen to, I think, some of the key points and facts that came out of the workshops. And then we'll have a brief opportunity to ask any other remaining questions that you may have. We were going to do a full Q&A at the end, but I think you've asked questions of the speakers as we've gone along today. So I think if that's okay, we'll use the time just to catch up on what people have heard in the workshops, give you an opportunity to ask any questions of the people who ran the workshops. And if there are still remaining questions at the end, then we can pick those up just before we leave, if that's okay. So because the material's up, we'll start with 2026, rights of way. And if you just give us the sort of the main highlights for a couple of minutes, that'd be great.
Yep. So for the benefit of everyone, then, we were talking about what could LAFs do to help influence, encourage and assist the collection of evidence and the making of definitive map modification order applications before 2026. And they split into three groups, and we've got three sheets of information which we will get typed up so they can go on to Huddle afterwards so we can spread everybody's thoughts. Key points coming out were that LAFs had a role for getting people together. So Buckinghamshire, for example, have got 40 parish councils and user groups coming together for a special archive training day shortly, and they've appointed a coordinator for knowing who's working on what and what applications are going in. So that was a really good example from Buckinghamshire LAF. So dividing, getting people together, dividing up areas and dividing tasks. They also had asking the county council to release highways records. So if they were digital, so we could get to them, then we wouldn't keep pestering people and taking up staff time.
Or paying for each request.
Another group talked about getting history groups involvement, perhaps schools, universities or other local history groups, to get them on photographing some of the records and doing some of the initial research and sharing it with the rights of way people. So that would be fantastic. They also wanted a how-to guide, so what to collect. Sarah, I think you're going to wave something that's a how-to guide.
You've written a book.
Sorry, we had to drop that one in.
You do have it, but I think a lot of you already have it. Anyway, it's here. Phil and I bought, three copies if anybody wanted to buy it.
This group also said to look at anomalies, so where things suddenly change status, it would be worth investigating. Did it continue or was the status needs looking at? So that was good. And last group of our three talked about parish councils sharing knowledge, which was good. LAF subgroups. I'm not really that familiar with how LAFs work, and they all seem to be a bit different to me, but the idea of subgroups so that the LAF itself knows what's going on and people are actually going off and getting on with some work sounded really good, using information from groups and talking to others and various bits and pieces there. Old rural district council records, that was a good one. And of course, some of these records are not even catalogued in the county archives yet. They're waiting for staff time. So you know, anything that people could get involved in is good. And if the LAF can coordinate some of those activities, that's a positive way forward. And also, because the county council at least has to talk to LAFs, it's a good opportunity for LAFs to say, well, we think this needs to happen, and start discussions about how best to make some of the activities actually take place. So that was the summary. Anything to add, Sarah?
No, I think just make sure that when you photograph a record, you keep it somewhere where not only you, but other people can find it. Whether you just share it with your user organisation, user groups, or the county council, doesn't matter. But just don't be selfish about it.
And don't store it all on one IT device so that it all vanishes one day when you least expect it. That's my advice. What, a question at the back?
Can I just stick in a plug for the PATH project, the Hampshire?
Ah, yes. Yes. Another good one.
The ATHH, if you look that, if you Google that, you'll find it.
We know that.
Massive website.
Yep.
Where we got Heritage Lottery money to have a manager manage the process of trawling the records office for the historic.
And I think it produced some good results too.
It has produced some good results. Yeah. We're still working on trying to get all the claims in.
Excellent, excellent work. So a really good example there. Okay, thank you.
Have we got any more questions? Yes, we have got one.
Do you have a spare book there?
Yes.
Yes. Talk to us afterwards.
There's only a small commission fee for Natural England for that point. Should we go next? Well, let's go in the order. We've got registering our white rose. We've got Peter here who might give us a summary. Is that...
Well, I wasn't expecting this. We went through what the legislation comprises, because the legislation was raised in 1991, believe it or not, requiring our councils to register our unadopted roads. This has been updated in 2007, and it's being updated at the present moment so that if you look at the local street gazetteer, by the end of next month, they should all have dedication codes. So they should satisfy the requirements of Proposal 25, which is if it's on the local street gazetteer as a private street, which means not maintainable, not private use, not maintainable, carrying public rights, then it's protected from cut-off. Our council's not doing that. My guess is your council's not doing that. And the reason I blame actually the user groups, because there's been no guidance. If there was some guidance as to what the council should be doing that we could refer to and say, look, you should be doing this, I think it would be happening. But as far as the minister's concerned, by the end of next month, we've got a base map, viewable online, all our unadopted roads recorded, all recorded as carrying public rights, and we can proceed with the Deregulation Act. And if it's not happening, tell the minister. He needs feedback.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Peter on that topic of no. Okay. Thank you. We'll move on to Richard and disability access.
He's there. Hello. Testing. Yeah. Right. I'm going to stand up. Okay, we was a small but select band looked at disability access, but we've already had quite a lot about access to disability today. Basically, I shared with them some of the things that we're doing in Gloucestershire, and we got some extra ideas. Basically, what we've done in Gloucestershire for disability access is to set up a subgroup from the LAF. There's only 5 members of the LAF on it, but we are looking at ways that we can actually do things to improve access for people with disabilities. From the workshop we've just had, I think there was 2 other things that perhaps came out, and that is a more creative use of radar locks and keys for allowing people access through locked barriers, and the final one was to look at trying to identify some routes which could be upgraded for people with disabilities. We've already got some in the Cotswold AONB. The wardens there have done some, but across the rest of Gloucestershire there aren't any, so that's an area that we're working in.
Thank you.
Any questions? Okay,
no,
cheers.
Thank you. And then finally from this afternoon, we had looking at the benefits of dementia-inclusive walks. Rachel, do you want to just summarise quickly the discussion in your group, if that's okay?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't expecting you to do this either. I'm from an organisation called Dementia Venture, which is all about supporting people who are living with dementia to get outdoors. And, you know, this morning we were talking about you may not have 2 legs to carry on getting outdoors and walking. Well, actually, we know that people who are often diagnosed with dementia are the opportunities to get out and have that sense of choice and freedom in their lives is taken away. And so as an organisation, we are looking at risk-benefit assessments, so really looking at the benefits would actually far outweigh the risk in supporting people to have access to outdoors. We look at dementia inclusive walks, which is less about the distance but more about the kind of the quality and the sensory emotional engagement as well when you're out and about. We're doing lots of training around the country to try and promote this concept because, of course, we think about dementia as something we don't want to talk about. But actually, it's really important that we do, given that one in three of us will be diagnosed with dementia in our lifetime. And by supporting people to remain active, we reduce the risk of becoming a more sort of crisis-driven, very expensive demand on health services. So by enabling people with dementia to be active now, we reduce the risk of comorbidities and other health conditions developing. So it's really all about enabling people with dementia to live well and better lives. Okay.
Thank you.
Any questions?
No.
Okay.
Very well paid now.
Thank you.
We didn't hear summaries from this morning's workshops. I don't know. I'm hoping we still have John and Alan with us from Lara. Yes, yes, we do.
We do, yes.
Thank you.
We're here to the bitter end. Thank you. we talked quite a lot, actually, about who Lara are and what they are and how they were formed and the progression during the last 30 years. And then we finally, discussed quite a number of aspects of recreational motoring in the countryside. We posed three questions to our group. One was, what experience do you have of harnessing social media to engage with people outside the conventional club structure? Because clearly that isn't working totally. The second one, has social media and the way in which it allows informal and ad hoc associations of people with common interests eroded or even replaced organised clubs? If it has, who is going to fund the essential representation and legal work that most outdoor recreation organisations currently do? And the third question was, does social media operate a better outreach than do or did other media because it engages and empowers at little cost far more people than we could reach and influence previously? If it does, how do traditional organisations make the transition to using social media, or does it remain as a bolt-on traditional operation practice? And we had a very interesting discussion and examples from the people in the group about Facebook and Twitter and all sorts of other things, some of which I'd never heard of. Alan and I went away recognising and noting that we got a lot of things to look at to get ourselves into the 21st century.
Thank you, yes.
Is that sufficient?
Thank you. It is. And I've left my list here. Hold.
And then we also heard this morning from Becky and Keely, who talked about their Naturally Health Project on Dartmoor and on Exmoor. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Keely. This is Becky. I work for Exmoor National Park and Becky's at Dartmoor. And we are running health and wellbeing projects. We are the first ever health and wellbeing coordinators on national parks. And so we're both working towards getting people to use the national parks as a resource for health and wellbeing. And so in our group this morning, we got people to look at what the opportunities are in their green space. And we looked at some of the challenges and then the solutions to those. And the three things really that we thought were key were the correct balance between the people and the place. So are people going to respect the place? And that ties in with education as well. So there was concern over do new audiences coming on to the place know how to look after it and care for it? Are they confident on coming on? I'd suggest that works both ways as well. And for audiences who aren't typical of the audiences onto the national parks, of how we interact with those people and make them feel welcome as well. And the diversity of the groups, it all ties in really, and including people who wouldn't historically come on. The cynic in me looks at a lot of our advertising, which is very white, middle class, and so I think that we've projected an image that the National Parks is for those people. So I think we need to change really the way we advertise. We need to think about how we do that and how we interact with different people coming on. Bex, do you want to?
Yes, I think we realised that within 45 minutes, basically what we're doing is opening up questions for people to think about. And the question, this has made us reflect on it, but I think the same goes out to you, because if we stand up and look at our audience, how are we being inclusive in here as well? So it's a really deep thought out process that we've got a lot of work to develop.
Any
questions? Oh, yeah, questions.
No. Thank you, thank you. And then finally, a little bit I listened to, we heard from Seamus and Martin, who talks about charitable status for subgroups or for parts of LAF.
I think subgroups is a little bit of a misunderstanding. Yeah, briefly, for those of you who weren't there, we spoke this morning about how we came about the decision to set up a charity as an associated part of the Norfolk LAF. It's funny mentioning the PATH project earlier on. I remember making a call to someone. I don't know whether it was yourself asking how you'd got on with Heritage Lottery Fund funding, but that's the sort of thing we're looking at. We went on to explain how we made the decision to make ourselves a CIO and how we've built that into together with our rights of way improvement plan, so they mesh together, and really how we will go on in the future. It's really very early days for us. We're in the process of designing our image and getting our image out so that we can get people to understand what we're doing.
Thank you.
Any questions? Good.
Thank you. So thanks very much. That was just a brief run through of the workshops to give you a sort of a flavour of what was discussed in them. I suppose I'll just try and close of what we've heard today. I mean, we started off, I think, talking about the 2026 target, and I suppose that's looking at how you secure the access infrastructure that we've got at the moment. I think it was well remarked by one of the speakers early on that we would do well to. We would. Pip is confused. He's holding up a sign and I can't read it. Oh, okay. Sorry. That we would do. You know, we would do well to recognise that we're fortunate with what we've got. But I think we also recognise there's a lot of work to do to make sure that we don't lose some of that as part of this 2026 process. And I think that's been a helpful part of the discussion. We've also explored a little bit about what some of the, I suppose, the new pathways to success might be in the future. About, I think there was some really interesting discussions about how we begin to unlock funding, how we unlock bits of other budget, particularly the health budget, but also tapping into leisure and recreation and tourism and local enterprise partnership budgets, all of which are opportunities for us, I think, especially if we make the sort of connections we heard from our speaker. He was, you know, the connections that have been made around Keithley and with sport, those are sort of the places that we can be looking in the future, I think, to try and sustain some of the activities that we want to do. We've reflected a little bit on the tough times that we find ourselves in. I think I think that's a reality. It's the same for LAFs, for local authorities, certainly for parts of the public sector like Natural England. And I think part of what we hope to do today is to bring us together so we can really look at some of those new opportunities and help each other through some of the problems that we're undoubtedly going to have as we try and sustain the operations that we've had and sustain the activities that we want to do. There was some interesting look at some of the barriers as well. I think we heard about the barriers to people's enjoyment of the natural environment, and often those are, you know, the starting point from that is other people's perceptions, and if we if we work, I think, you know, across the range of users, with cyclists, with sort of the explorers and the adventurers, with people with disabilities, both sort of physical and mental, with people on horses and people who want just old-fashioned sort of quiet wandering and contemplation. I think there is a space for all of that in our Rights of Way network. And I think what's been promising today is that there's a real sense of strength when you put all of those interests together. And I think that was one of the encouraging signs today, that understanding that, you know, together as a lobby, it's quite a powerful sector, actually. And I think, again, for me, that's one of the things that I would take away from that, especially as I go into some of the discussions with some of the county councils around here. And then finally, I think we heard a little bit of a challenge to us about what asking us whether we have a bit of an image problem in the rights of way sector. I think several of the speakers picked that up today, asking about the way that we frame it, the way that we present ourselves. And I think for me that's the final part of the puzzle, actually, because if you can get that presentation to people right, about the benefits that investing in the Right of Way network brings, rather than their legal obligation to do so, I think that part that becomes a very powerful message. And that's not forgetting that there's strong statutory and legal underpinnings to everything we do, but I think you know, that frame about looking at what it offers to people and the opportunities that it offers, I think is sort of the powerful message that I hope we can take out of here. And then finally, just to say, we've been asked about presentations. We'll make sure they all go onto the Huddle site, as many of the workshop and the main presentations today. We will send out links to you all with that information on. I hope that's okay. And if you want any more, then let us know, and we'll see how we can best provide it to you. And then finally, before we say goodbye, and I now see what Pippa was flashing up, I think we need to say thank you to Rob, who's coordinated today pretty much single-handedly, has put on a... I've seen him running around furiously around the office up here several evenings, so I know he's put a lot into it. And I hope also that, you know, you've got a lot out of it today. It's great to see so many of you in Bristol, and I wish you all a safe journey home. So thank you very much. Thank you.